The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today James Byrne. He joins us on the telephone in Portland, Oregon. He's got a new Des Limerick thriller out. It's called Chain Reaction. Welcome to the program.
I am glad to be here.
This is the third book featuring Des Limerick. Who is this guy?
Well, I had the most fun creating this fellow. First off, he has a completely ridiculous name. His name is Desmond Aloysius Limerick, and he is ex-military. In his military training, he has kind of a unique, one shouldn't say kind of unique, forgive me, that's bad English. He has an unusual training in that he is a breach artist or a gatekeeper. His job is to open any door, keep it open as long as necessary, and control who does and does not get through it. And now he's 35 years old, retired, living in the States. He's a guitarist and a pianist, picking up gigs with other musicians and running into trouble and using his strange background to try and help folks out who are in need of his help.
And in this new book, he's doing his usual stuff, apparently. I have not read the first two books, but he's a man of action, and he's also a guy with a lot of skills. You mentioned the gatekeeping thing. He knows a lot about technology, doesn't he?
Yes. As part of my idea about this breach expert, he sounds like he's from the streets. He has a very street-savvy patois, but he has engineering background, too, and he's also a minor league hacker. But that engineering background and his ability to fix technological problems are a big factor in how he does his business.
As Chain Reaction begins, he's been invited to sit in at a musical event, and he's really interested in doing this because one of his idols is going to be on the bill. Set this up.
He goes to a fictional conference center that I invented that's next to Newark Liberty Airport. And he's going to do this gig with some old pals of his, plus the headliner. And almost instantly, the place is attacked part of a terrorist attack. And this is an enclosed conference center, got glass ceilings, glass walls. And so almost immediately, Des finds that he's in trouble, and he enlists the help of a woman whom he had met earlier, and we meet her in the prologue before Chapter 1, and she's there as well. So the two of them are sort of isolated from the police, isolated from the FBI, and have to figure out how to handle this crisis that they're in.
And, of course, she is a very attractive thief, and he finds her very attractive, and he's willing to overlook her thievery and actually become somewhat protective of her.
Yeah, he's not a judgmental kind of guy. I mean, thievery in general is not a good thing, but, he doesn't cast a lot of judgments.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is James Byrne. We're talking about Chain Reaction. It's the third Des Limerick thriller. Limerick, is that an Irish name, maybe?
It is, yes. I'm Irish-American myself, and Limerick is just one of those. It's a fun word. It's also a bad form of poetry, and it's this a famous literary town in Ireland. So I just really resonated with me as a good name for a character.
Have you ever had him recite limericks in the stories?
No, I never have. He sometimes is involved with the writing of lyrics for music, but I've never had him actually do a limerick, which, you know what, now that you say it, does seem like sort of a natural, doesn't it?
I think that'd be fun. Of course, it'd probably be obscene, but...
Definitely. Oh, yeah, man, swear like a sailor.
Okay. Well, I'm treading lightly here because I don't want to give away too much, but I don't think it's an extreme spoiler to mention that... there's a ring of assassins involved in this story.
Right. It's not that gets revealed pretty early. And Des soon finds out that he was lured to this place by somebody who knows a lot about his background. He's not there accidentally. It's no coincidence that he's on site for the terrorist attack. And so now not only does he have to foil that attack, But he's got to figure out who's actually pulling the strings here, because somebody from his past is the actual puppet master here. So that for him becomes the bigger mystery for the Act 2 and Act 3 of this book.
And this mysterious someone is someone who supposedly doesn't exist.
Right. And I reveal this pretty early, so it's not giving anything away earlier. The woman who's behind all of this has much the same skill set Dez has, and we soon realize that because she had the same training he had. And this is my first glimpse of somebody else who is a gatekeeper in the three books. Dez's skill sets were unique up until this moment, but he's actually facing somebody who had the same training he did and is at least as good at what he does as he is.
I'm assuming you didn't make up the gatekeeper thing, that they really exist, and do they have tattoos?
I did make it up. There are people in the military who are breach experts, and their jobs are to open doors and keep doors open. So that does exist, but the designation of being a gatekeeper in this particular military unit he was in, that was entirely made up. And yes, he has a tattoo of Janus or Janusz, the two-faced Roman god of portals, and so does, in fact, his adversary.
Well, I like his humor. He's a very kind of easygoing, lighthearted guy, and I also like the fact that we get halfway into the book before he's willing to even touch a gun. He keeps coming up with these bizarre weapons that are rather effective, and this woman he encounters, she doesn't want to touch guns either.
Right. I'll tell you a story. When the first book came out, Gatekeeper, and my editor, Keith Kaleb, brilliant, brilliant editor, edited the full book, got all the way through it, was done with his part of it. And I then asked him, I said, did you realize that in the entire book, Dez never shoots anybody? And Keith said, oh, my Lord, I had not realized that you never have him shoot anybody. Now I'm three books in, and Dez says, yet he's fired guns, he's hit objects, but I've never had him use a gun against an opponent in the three books. And it's sort of intentional because he's a very strong, well-built fellow, and he's very, very smart. And I just think putting a gun in his hand feels like cheating, kind of. Like, I'd rather he doesn't ever, ever use a gun to defeat an opponent. I'd much rather that he outsmarts, outthinks, or out-invents his opposition. So far in three books, he's fired a couple of guns. He's never hit anybody with it.
You've also got a character from law enforcement in here, and she's an FBI agent, and their interplay is entertaining as well.
Well, I thought it would be sort of fun. I've not ever actually quite seen this where, you know, you have the guy who's the amateur and he's in town and he's interfering with the investigation. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to have the lead FBI agent say, wow, you were super helpful. Anything else you can do for us? And rather than that obvious adversarial relationship, I thought it would be awful fun to have her say, well, I don't think we could have gotten where we are without you, so welcome to the team, man, because I just hadn't read that before. And Stella Ansara ends up being one of my favorite characters. She's a ton of fun. If anybody's read the other two books, you'll know that there are lots of strong female characters in all of my writing, and this book's the same. The strong female characters help leaven the fact that I've got this big, strong, tough dude at the center of my stories, because these books, if you have a single male protagonist in action-adventure, you can get into toxic masculinity really quickly. So one way to leaven that is to have all these strong female characters, and Stella ends up being one of my favorites.
Toxic masculinity, huh? I'm thinking back to all this genre stuff I've read where, yeah, uh-huh, that's true.
It is a thing to watch for.
Mm-hmm.
I like to jokingly refer to Dez as the anti-James Bond. He's not suave and he's not cool.
Well, he does have a way with the ladies, though.
He does. That's true.
Mm-hmm. My guest is James Byrne. We're talking about Chain Reaction, the third Dez Limerick thriller, just out. And as we're getting into this, you have some great twists. And we also have these situations where he's got to react really quickly. And he's essentially a killing machine. He's just, even without a gun, I mean, the guy is lethal.
It was fun to have a character who is a soldier, and his job has been to wear a uniform and to kill people in the past. And so it was, I really wanted to come up with a way in which this guy would still be doing that, because it's an action adventure book. It's a thriller. And yet he also has to outthink the other guys. So although he goes up against opponents and sometimes they end up, you know, dead, primarily he wins by being smarter than they are. He's good in a fight as well, but primarily he wins by being smarter.
And in regard to these strong female characters, when we get to the end of the story, it becomes apparent that one particular character is probably going to turn up in the next book.
Yep. Not the next book, but he will be around. She's his nemesis and his white whale. And so, yeah, I definitely am going to bring Liv Gelamon back, because I got to tell you, honestly, she was tons of fun to write.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO. It's the Book Nook, fact-based journalism in service of democracy. I've been joined on the telephone in Portland by James Byrne, and we have some listeners out there who have probably read your other work as James Byrne, and we probably have other listeners out there who have read your work under your actual name. We need to tell our listeners that James Byrne is a pseudonym. What's your real name, and tell us about your other work.
I was born Dana Haynes, and I've written a lot of books under Dana Haynes. I had 4 books with Minotaur St. Martin's Press under the Dana byline, and then I had a trilogy at a smaller house called Blackstone. And then Keith Kayla, my editor, my absolute tremendous editor, contacted my literary agent and said, "Hey, does Dana have a single male protagonist action adventure book in his hip pocket, because I'm looking for one?" And as I could have it, I did. And he said, "I like it. I'm going to buy it. We're going to buy a 2-book deal on it. But I want you to write under a pseudonym." And I didn't know why. And so I said, "Well, I can do whatever you want me to do. I'm cheap manual labor here." And he said, "We're going to launch you as a new writer, because our marketing toolbox is different when we have a new writer. So if we launch you under a pseudonym, we can do different things to push the book out." So I said, "Fine, that's fine." So I invented the name James Byrne, and we launched the book. And you know what? Son of a gun, he was right. This is the best sales I've ever had. So he knew what he was talking about.
Well, if you were on Blackstone, it makes me think maybe it was Shane Salerno.
My literary agent was Janet Reed, and I'd been with her for a very long time, and she passed away last year unexpectedly. So part of last year was, amongst other things, for the first time in a long, long time, going out to see if I could find a new literary agent, which is never a lot of fun. You know, I'm a middle child. I hate selling myself to anybody. That's not my gift. But I got really fortunate and got picked up by an agent named John Talbot, who has got a really good reputation in the industry and is a really nice guy. So there is a 4th Des Limerick book. It is in the hands of my editor. It's in the form of a manuscript. I'm expecting edits back at any time. And then once that's done, then my new agent and I, we will begin the process of negotiating for a new contract. Knock on wood.
Well, I've interviewed a lot of authors who had stuff on Blackstone, so I don't think about them as being that small, even though I know they are, and they kind of started off as an audio imprint. But for a while, I thought maybe that was Shane Salerno's stable of writers, that you have Meg Gardner, Steve Hamilton, Adrian McKinty, Eric Rickstead. They're all Salerno clients over there. It's amazing.
Yep, he moved all his folks to Blackstone, and Meg is a friend of mine. She's really, really happy at there, and I enjoyed working with them too. They're they were a good house to work with, and that trilogy that I did, this St. Nicholas Salvage and Wrecking trilogy, did pretty well for them. I really enjoyed it.
Well, tell us about these books under your real name. What were they like? Were they crime novels?
When I was with Minotaur St. Martin's, I did a book called Crashers. And it was about the National Transportation Safety Board's team that goes out when an airplane falls from the sky for no apparent reason and does the investigation. And that book came out in 2010, I guess. And nobody else was really writing about airline disasters at the time. I kind of owned that subgenre myself. So I did 2 books like that. And then Keith had a very, very funny conversation with me one day. He said, "You know where we sell hardback books, Dana? Airports. Mm. You're not helping." So We had to put the airplane books away for, and then I did two more books featuring one of the characters who was in Crashers. She became the single female protagonist of the next two books while I was with them. Then when that series was done, we sold a trilogy to Blackstone. And that the idea behind that was, and I learned this from my journalism, I'm a print journalist, that the International Criminal Court has judges and lawyers and researchers and clerks, but it doesn't have a law enforcement arm. There's nobody who enforces what the International Criminal Court does. So I ventured the idea, what would it be like if there was these two people whose job it was to go find the worst criminals in the world, kidnap them, and dump them off at The Hague so the court could try them. Mm. So I invented this these two people who basically go and find horrible, horrible criminals and gift wrap them and take them to The Hague. It was a fun idea for a story, and I made a trilogy out of it. That was kind of a blast.
I love that premise. And you've just opened the door. You said, I'm a print journalist. I want to know about your day job.
I currently am the editor-in-chief of the Portland Tribune, and we are an online daily and a print weekly here in the Portland area. We have 22 sister publications, mostly in suburban Portland, a couple farther out. And we're kind of a small little shop, not too many writers. Some of our suburban papers are really one- and two-person operations. I have a staff of eight, counting myself. And we're pretty proud of it. There are not a lot of newspapers that are still standing, and we managed to, I mean, we're a church mouse operation. I wouldn't call us profitable per se, but we've managed to hold out. So it's the career of my lifetime. You know, when I was in college, I wanted to either be a print journalist or a novelist, and now I've got gray hair and I'm both. So I've been a very, very lucky dude.
Nice. Well, it's a difficult landscape, and right now media is really being demonized, all kinds of media really under the microscope, writing big checks, being punished. How do you feel about the current landscape and the current political situation in our country? Is that something you feel like you can talk about?
We're a little bit isolated from that because we do straight-up hyper-local community journalism. So, for instance, I have a paper in the small town of Beaverton, Oregon, and I have a paper in one of my sister publications. It's in Gresham, Oregon. The Beaverton paper only covers the suburb of Beaverton. And if you throw a baseball from the edge of Beaverton and whatever it hit, they will not cover. They are hyper-local. Gresham is hyper-local. Estacada is hyper-local. I get to cover all of the suburbs. So my writers are primarily writing about Portland, but we also get into the suburbs a bit. And we don't have the same fake journalism, fake news problem that national outlets do, because if you go to the school board meeting in any of our suburbs and you write what happened, well, nobody will ever say it was fake news because there's only 15 people in the meeting, and they will tell you if you did it once, you get fired, right? So we don't really suffer from it like the national news does. Most people seem to recognize that what we're writing is the truth, and what we're writing is what is honestly being depicted in our communities. Now, it's true that Donald Trump really hates Portland, Oregon. Portland and Seattle were both mentioned by him before his inauguration. And these are towns that he once put federal troops on the streets of Portland, and we're kind of fearful of a reprise of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we expect to get more of his ire and more of his attention in the year to come. But for the most part, we're isolated from some of the hassles that the national media have to put up with.
It's amazing how many crime writers come out of journalism, and obviously you're still in journalism, but a lot of them come out of it. The Michael Connellys, the Laura mm-hmm. Lipmans, the John Sanfords. I remember John talking about back in the days when he was with the Minneapolis Star Tribune and having to cover school board meetings, and how that is like one of the most difficult things you can do.
Oh, they really are. They truly are. I go to the World Mystery Convention. It's also known as BoucherCon.
And uh-huh.
There's also a thing called Thriller Fest in New York every year. And what I discovered is all of us who came out of print journalism, we're all like really, really fast writers. We can generate stories really fast. And we have thick skin. So if the editor tells you, I hate your chapter five, you're like, oh, well, fine, I'll fix it, whatever. I don't care. Mm. And we do run into other writers who, A, are very slow and miss deadlines, and also who complain bitterly about being edited. But those of us who come into journalism really want to get edited. And I'm genetically incapable of missing a deadline. I've never missed a deadline in my life. So the realms of fiction writing and mystery writing are really separated into those of us who got our training in journalism and those who didn't. And we, those of us who did, sort of have a different experience of what it's like to hit the deadline, get edited, and be happy about it. My very first editor, back when I was still in college, I had three books published by Bantam. And the editor named Kate Misiak was my very first editor. This was many, many, many years ago, back in the 90s. And she was very, very tough, and she made me a better writer. Then I had Keith Kayla at Minotaur St. Martin's, who's the nicest guy in the world. He's a real pleasant dude, but boy, he's a good writer. And this is a true story. He once said in one of my books, on page 35, you tell a scene from so-and-so's point of view, but on page 312, somebody else needs to know that. Would you consider changing the point of view in that earlier chapter? And I realized he had a better granular sense of my story than I had. And that's how good he is. And I've been blessed to have really good editing.
A close reader.
Yeah.
My first newspaper editor once cut something out of something I wrote. I write book reviews, and he cut it out, and he explained to me, he said, I'm sorry, but that part failed the Wheaties test. And I said, what's that mean? He says, if the reader is reading the paper and they choke on their cereal, it failed.
That's awesome. I've never heard that one.
Yeah, well, I learned from it. I really did, so you're right. My guest is James Byrne, and we're talking about Chain Reaction, or at least we were, his new Des Limerick thriller. Tell us more about the story. Draw in some listeners out there who are saying, you know, this sounds interesting, but he needs to sell this to me. Why should I read it?
A couple of things. When I decided I wanted to do a action-adventure thriller book with a male protagonist, I had first off, I got to tell you, I love the genre. A lot of people are writing really good stuff right now. And I had to do something different. I needed mine to stand out. So after a lot of thinking on that topic, I did three things, really. One was giving him this technological engineering background as a breach artist, a gatekeeper. Second, making him from England, because just I wasn't reading anything at the time of any male action-adventure heroes who were British or from the UK. So that would be different. And the third thing I decided to do was he is a guy with no angst whatsoever. He's a happy-go-lucky fella. He thinks of himself as the luckiest fellow in the world. He's always in a pretty good mood. He is not nearly as funny as he thinks he is. He's constantly saying things that he thinks are hilarious, and all these Americans can't figure out what the heck he's saying. He's very, very fond of women. He enjoys the company of women a great deal. And it was just fun to do a character who had no angst whatsoever. And he just is kind of, he's a bit of a, you know, he's only 5'8". He's bow-legged, walks with a sailor's gait. So I made him an unusual fellow in all of these manners. And then there was, as we talked about earlier, all the strong female protagonists in all these stories, which helps, I think helps the stories along a great deal. So if you're looking for a story that has a real macho character, I may not be your writer, but if you're looking for a guy who is pleasant and in a good mood and who also wins fights, Des Limerick books, I tell you this much, they are incredibly fun to write. I'm having an absolute blast living in his world.
And they're also fun to read. My guest is James Byrne. The book is Chain Reaction. And do you read in the genre? And if you do, who are some of the writers you admire?
Oh, but there's some folks who are absolutely terrific out there. Mark Graney is really, really good. Robert Cray, C-R-A-I-S. He must have written 25 books. 25 of them were great. He's an amazing writer. Greg Hurwitz does the Orphan X series. I think they're really, really good. Meg Gardner is doing the Unsub series. Meg Gardner also did the prequel novel to the movie Heat with Michael Mann, the director, which, by the way, is an excellent, excellent novel. So she's terrific. Nick Petrie does the Peter Ash books. I mean, they're great. Lisa Gardner, a tremendous writer in this field. So I think right now we're living in a kind of golden era for action adventure thriller writing. And there's just some folks out there that are doing a tremendous job of it.
We just had Bob Craze on again last week. He's been on the show more than any other author except for one. And that new book of his, I think it's one of the best books he's ever done.
I have it. I haven't started it yet. But he's amazing. He started out doing the Elvis stories, and then they started to get, I don't know, he felt they were a little stale, and so he switched his protagonists and did a bunch where Joe Pike was the primary and Elvis was secondary. And it freshened up the stories. It made them, once again, just made them incredibly fun reads. I think he's money in the bank. I don't think that guy could write a bad book if he tried.
There's a lot of humor, and I think readers need that. When we're escaping, this is escapism, we need something to make us laugh.
I could not agree with you more. I think that really, again, I've used the word a couple of times, but I think it leavens the kind of books that I write if there's a lot of humor in them.
And what are you working on now? Do you have a fourth book finished in this series?
It's done, and it's in the hands of my editor. And while I'm waiting, I got maybe 100 pages or so into what I would like to be book five, but we don't have a contract for book five yet. Once book four has been accepted, once Keith is happy with it and it's a go, then my literary agent and I will begin the process of negotiating for the next books. Then I'd very much like to see if we can sell the second series, because I'm a pretty fast writer. It would not be difficult for me to do two books in a calendar year. And I would really love to have two series going. So knock on wood, we'll see if any of that comes about. Plus, I can't get into a lot of details, but I can tell you that there's some news coming out of Hollywood this year. We should be able to announce in the not-too-distant future that there's a project featuring Bez that a studio is working on right now. So we're hoping to have some really good news in the coming weeks or months about adaptation of the Des books to the big screen.
Well, your publicist Hector alluded to the movie stuff or the big screen stuff, and I was waiting for you to just kind of volunteer the information, and thank you.
Oh, my wife and I have been over the moon. We have everybody I know in the writing novel world knows that every Hollywood deal falls apart. Mm-hmm. They're always, you know, it's the moon and the stars, and then they all fall apart. So Katie and I made the decision that we were going to celebrate every micro milestone in this process. Every time there's a meeting with the producer, every time there was a meeting with the screenwriter, everything, we would pop a cork and celebrate it, because we always knew that it was going to fall apart. And then one day it didn't. We were like, oh, now it's a real thing. Good Lord. But we're still always assuming that, you know, still at any moment, Things go sideways in Hollywood.
Yeah.
We're continuing our philosophy with every micro milestone, pop a cork, celebrate, because you never know if the whole thing is ever going to disappear on you, and it could.
And I'm guessing that even when they don't make them, you still get a little check, which helps you pop some corks.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's been really, really nice. Because okay. As you know, community journalism doesn't pay anything. The pay is dreadful. So I'm happy to get a little bit of guilt out of Hollywood. That's been nice.
Well, you got to love it. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, this has been so much fun. Thank you. This is great.
You've been listening to The Book Nook. My guest is James Byrne, and the new Des Limerick is Chain Reaction. Thanks for tuning in.